This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Tackling Cincinnati's high infant mortality rate, smoking, and lack of easy access to healthy food are all on the agenda of new health commissioner Melba Moore. I spoke with her earlier.
Melba Moore, thanks so much for taking some time with us today.
Certainly, certainly.
In the story about your arrival from St. Louis, the Inquirer wrote, quote, "For the past 2 years, the health department has endured turmoil as its governing board sought to hire a new leader. The on-deck candidate left for another job. The interim choice had to wade into the thousands of details for the department to apply for accreditation. Senior department managers were so unhappy this year with the leadership search that the city's human resources director told them to pipe down or face corrective action." So there were also some departures by top staff members prior to or soon after your arrival. I'm wondering now, in about a year and a half or so since you've been here, how has the health department changed or evolved since you got here?
Well, whenever you have new leadership to come in to any organization, you're going to have turnover. People decide that they want to do something different. I think our department, the Cincinnati Health Department as it is, we're focused. We're focused on infant mortality. We're focused on getting accredited. We're focused on becoming the health center choice for everybody, no matter who you are. We're focused on treating people with dignity and respect. We're focused on addressing disparities and improving the inequities in what we see in the data and as it relates to healthcare. So we want to make a difference. You know, our department is focused on my baby project, Safe Places Cincy. I want people who are hurting to come to my centers and to receive help, because that's why we're there. And Safe Place Cincy is just for anyone who wants to stop that treadmill that they're on as it relates to addiction.
What happens when someone shows up at one of those centers?
I have a strike force team that greets them and reassures them that everything's going to be okay. We're going to get you in a system of care.
Are these for people who are suffering from addiction?
Yes, suffering from addiction. And the process is that we want to issue a medical clearance. So if we are recognizing anything that warrants them going to the ER, we would send them to the ER and not take them through our process. But for the most part, issue that medical clearance and make a determination of the best treatment provider for them. This is a pilot project that we started March 18th, and we have three providers, Talbert House, Brightview, and Cat House. So we're working with those three providers to make sure we funnel people to the appropriate center so that they can get the treatment. And we know that we were going to have false starts, meaning people would call us, say they're coming, they didn't show, or we had a family member bring somebody in. And we said, nope, it has to be voluntary. They have to be ready to move into the space and to seek help.
The opioid addiction crisis goes far beyond Cincinnati's borders, mm-hmm. within the region. So mm-hmm. you'll see it on both sides of the river. You'll mm-hmm. see it out in the suburbs. Do you think as a region, collectively, there's enough being done to address this problem?
I'm in public health, so I'm always talking about there's always more that we can do. And one of the things, this is how our department has changed. I've reached to Butler County, and I'm working with Terry Smith in Butler County, who has a fabulous program, too. It's one city against heroin. See, the thing you have to recognize, you can't do it alone, and you have to work in space with your other partners collaboratively. You have to link. You have to connect, make the connections so that you can do this lift. It's just not about heroin. It's the synthetics that we are seeing, and it's about we need to save lives. So you join hands with everybody that's in the space to join to save lives, and you connect, and you get out there and meet people where they are.
What about the side effects of the opioid crisis that can impact people who aren't even using? And I'm not just talking about the petty crimes associated with it, where addicts may be mm-hmm. desperate for money, so they do some petty robberies or some burglaries or steal from cars. I'm talking mm-hmm. about these increases in hepatitis C, yeah. HIV cases mm-hmm. On both sides of the river. Do you think people in general, just the mm-hmm. general citizenry, understand the significance of all of this?
If you're in public health and in the medical field, healthcare field, and I think you do. I think your listening audience if they have an interest or they know someone that this has happened to, they know. We can never assume everybody knows, and I think it's our job, our role, to make sure we inform, we educate the community on what's happening and how it impacts them and what they can do.
What are your thoughts on needle exchange or syringe access programs?
Fabulous. And I mean that. It's not about we're contributing to someone continuing their addiction. I would rather, you know, when I think about that, and I had a struggle with it initially, but it's, we know what people are doing. So make it safe for them so that we can, you know, this is reduce what we might end up seeing when you talked about hepatitis C, when you talk about HIV, you know, the spread of the condition. So we want to make sure we have the tools, the resources available so that individuals can be safe and protect themselves and as well as their loved ones and others too.
What do you think are the best practices for such a program? Because there are different versions of those programs across mm-hmm. the region. Mm-hmm. Some may be one-to-one where you have to turn a needle in mm-hmm. order to get a clean one. Mm-hmm. Others may just be you show up and you get what you need. What's the right approach in your opinion?
Well, to your point, it varies. I like the one-to-one approach. To bring people in and also have education attached to it as well. Not pressure, but education. Because at some point, someone will say, I'm tired and I need help. And I think we need to be available. You know, that, and I like it because it falls in line with Public Health 3.0. You take the programs to where the people are, put them in the community. Be innovative in what you do. We're working with Carrico. I'm really excited about Carrico because they're getting ready to kick off. Hope I'm not too premature with this, but they're kicking off their harm reduction program on July the 11th. So anyone that's out there and listening, please go to Carrico. It's from 5 to 7 in the evening where you can have it. There's the needle exchange will be there, and we'll have a staff person there. And hopefully we can encourage individuals for medication-assisted treatment to come link them through to our health centers and then link them through to behavioral health services and then link them back in to primary care health services because that's what it's about. We want to make sure they're healthy.
And Caracol, of course, is an organization that works with people with HIV.
With and HIV, and they provide support services. Great organization, too.
What do you think is the biggest health concern or crisis or problem in Cincinnati?
Well, my heart leads me to infant mortality. I've always had an interest in women and children, caring and ensuring that they receive the best care that they can receive. And again, that's in partnership. But the opioid, the synthetic drug issue, its crisis is in our community. So I'm biased some days when I talk about infant mortality and I'm talking to my partners over at Cradle and Every Child Succeeds and the Children's Home. I'm biased when I'm talking about when I talk about mental health and I lean in with my partner, Susan Shelton, at Mind Peace. You know, I become biased because all of those issues are very important to me. And that's why I use that approach of being collaborative with my partners. You can't be in this space. You can't be adversarial with people and have an axe to grind. You know, this is about keep the people in the middle. And then you look around. It's the wheel and spoke model. So the people in the middle and all of the spokes that radiate from that center, we have to work together.
Well, let's talk about infant mortality.
Sure.
First, just explain to us what that term means.
Infant mortality, our babies are dying sooner than they need to, too early, too soon, before their first birthday. And a lot of complications come with that. But there are other issues that are occurring with our families and our moms. If you talk to the women, the Queen City women, it's a group of African-American moms. They talk about stress. They talk about racism, and they talk about social isolation. And then imagine one of the things that we're working on with our partner at Cradle is we're talking about safe sleep, right? So we're saying to moms, we don't want you to sleep with your baby. And we don't. We want the baby to sleep in a crib, and we provide cribs. Well, let's think about this for a minute. I said the women are saying social isolation. They have a cuddle bug now. And that cuddle bug, they've carried it for 9 months. And you holding that baby, and you don't want to hear it cry. You don't want to make it feel like you're abandoning it, leaving it alone, right, in that cradle. So see how what we're saying is almost like, it's a tough situation. So we want to embrace understanding, going deep with our moms and sharing, it's okay to lay that baby down, but it's also important for us to educate grandma, the aunt, and everybody in that household. Because if you're in that household doing a home visit and you're sitting there and you're talking about safe sleep, keep the baby in the, you know, in its own bed, and don't, because you don't want to roll over because you'll get in a dead sleep. And if in your household your mom did the same thing and nothing happened to you. So the education is not just center point. It goes back to the spokes. Everyone attached to the mom is a part of that. So you really have to make sure you educate them on that. And understand, you know, life for you is different for me, but understand that while you're there in that home, so that you can, I call it doing my public health swirl when you go in the household, because you're looking around at everything possible. And my nurses are so great that they're able to do that, to, because that gives us an opportunity to identify the resources that's needed in that home. And then we don't want our families to become fatigued with all these people coming to knock on their doors. So you do the warm handoff, and you ask the question. First thing, if you're going to do outreach with anyone, you ask permission.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. My guest today is Cincinnati Health Commissioner Melba Moore, who I thank again for being here with us. Mm-hmm. You mentioned isolation as a term that these African-American mothers had mentioned. What do they mean by that? How do they feel isolated?
We're going to do a deep dive on that, and I've asked permission if I can come to their group meetings, and they said, sure, no problem. And we're going to talk about these issues. We're going to separate them and really do this deep dive on isolation. Anecdotally, what I'm thinking, I'm pregnant, I'm by myself. Whatever has happened, there's stigma to being pregnant and you're not being married. You're alone. You know, your girlfriends, maybe they've gone away, they've moved away, they're married, but that didn't happen for you. And you are by yourself. Isolation. And then you move into a new community. I think about myself. I moved into a new community. My family's not here. But my job has allowed me to make connections with people, to be out and about and, you know, exploring the city. But what if I didn't have a car? Now, you say, well, why did you go to the city if you didn't have a car? Well, maybe I thought a better job was coming. Or I had a job and something happened. I didn't have a car. Maybe I came from a city where I didn't need a car, you know, or financially I couldn't afford a car. So I'm in a place alone by myself and I got to learn. I have to figure it out. And it can be kind of tough and it can be kind of scary. And I can only imagine when you have a little cuddle bug with you. I can only imagine what that's like, you know. So I want to know more from them. And see, that's the beauty about this position, that you know what you know. But where the rubber meets the road is where you really validate and find out what you know is actually true or not. And that's what I like about being a health commissioner, because I get to go into the community and work with the community and all my partners, and you learn. It's a constant learning environment. And if anybody's ever thinking about going into public health, you have to have that desire, that hunger for wanting to learn more. You know, someone said, well, you're a scientist. I never view myself as a scientist. I just want to know more so that I can be more helpful.
We've done some programs on access to healthy food and the challenges for too many people in the city to find it, especially in the lower income sections of town. Mm-hmm. What role do you see the health department playing in local nutrition?
Well, that's one of our items in our community health improvement plan. Access to nutritious foods, access to services and care, health services, mental health, behavioral health, infant mortality. So how I see that, it's all a part of, that's another one of the spokes. You know, you have to have healthy, nutritious foods. The other thing that we're thinking about, I met with another partner. Every time I talk to you, somebody else, it pops up in my head that I've talked with, over my partners over at Free Store Food Bank. And they have the pop-up produce. Have you been to one of those before?
They're right across the street from us.
Right. So once a month, they bring in the produce, and the community can receive it. What a great novel idea. Who would have thought to do something like that? Again, put it where people are. We're thinking about doing it also at our health centers, but we have to be careful because we have another health center that's not far that's doing it on a Thursday, once a month on a Thursday. So we're thinking about what day would be best for us because we watched what's going on over at our Millville Health Center. So nutrition is very, very important to, you know, if you don't eat, you can't think. And, you know, it just tears the body down if you're not eating the right nutritious foods. And we want to make sure our moms, our babies, our fathers are getting the nutritious foods that they need. And our seniors, you know, and when you talk about infant mortality and the isolation, I need to get in that space too, I believe there's isolation with our seniors. So you have it on both ends of that spectrum. So I want to know more about that. I really believe that there's isolation out there, and I think we need to be doing more to engage our seniors. We have another partner, Rockdale Academy. The principal, Principal Wallace, that's my principal. I adopted a first grade classroom, and we have a family group that's going. And we were only going to kick it off in May, and then we want to come back at the beginning of the school year and run it full throttle, right? Those women and that gentleman in there said, you need to come back. So we've had our second meeting, and we've planned our third meeting. And that's what it's about. Show up. Talk with people, find out what ticks makes them tick and what do they need. And then you create a space for them to design that. And you don't move too fast. I have to always say you have to be respectful to make sure you ask permission. What else do you need? And if we have a resource, can we bring that to bear? And Buckeye has worked with me in that project. So really excited. There's a couple of initiatives going on new. Since I've been here, that I'm really excited about.
I want to talk more about your Rockdale project in just a moment. What do you think the government could do more to encourage better food choices? Because you can have these programs pop up around town or various organizations hosting pop-up produce shops, but how do you get it into the minds of people that they should have these ingredients to make a salad or some leaner meats rather than a bag of chips and soda?
Sure. So one of the things that we did in St. Louis, we had a contractual agreement with St. Louis University and their nutrition program. And the interns worked in the community, and we would have lunch and learns, brown bags, and they would actually provide the food. One of the students for their project had created this bicycle that made smoothies. So the more you pedaled, the more you were grinding the ingredients in the blender, which is really neat because now you're exercising and getting it done. So when I think about that, I think about, we talk a lot of times about people, young people, needing employment. It's a workforce development issue. So why not think in terms of these co-ops? Provide the training, provide some initial funding to get them started. You train them, get them started, and then they have their own little produce. And then through the training that they're connected with the farmer's market to be able to have for the produce to come in. And then that creates an opportunity for learning and job and, you know, employment. I think that's one thing that can be done. And then to continue to look at the opportunities that are currently in place and linking with those to bring more food into the community. But I really believe we saw a change in our parents and their eating patterns when we received some money from the National Institutes of Health in St. Louis through the Satcher Institute, because I'm a Satcher Fellow. And we were able to, we had someone come in and provide daycare for the children in the evening while we were teaching these parents workforce development how to run these parent groups that we were going to have. That was the aim was to reduce obesity. The person who provided the meal, they had to provide a menu card, and we gave the ingredients, and we made sure whatever the menu was, it was economical, that parents and families could go and purchase, and it was healthy stuff. And the children, if the children gave it a thumbs up, so we did some work upstream with another organization that worked with children and nutrition. And if the children gave it a thumbs up, it was a go. If they didn't, we didn't use it.
The thoughts of children are very important.
Yes, it
in
is.
A lot of these projects.
Yes.
In St. Louis, you were credited as being instrumental in having more children tested earlier for lead and having landlords clean up the units that they rent. Are there concerns about lead here in this area?
Certainly. We just met with another one of my partners, UC, yesterday regarding a project that we're working on. And then Confluence, we're working with Confluence on and Greater Cincinnati Waterworks as well with lead. We need to get more children tested. There needs to be more compliance in getting children tested twice. We want to make sure that those homes and that are identified high risk, that there's a opportunity for them to reach to us to receive the the assessment, and which leads to abatement, because we want to have safe places, Cincy.
You mentioned the first grade class at Rockdale School, Rockdale Academy. You said in a quote that you'll be with them until they go to Harvard.
Yes.
What does that mean?
That means that every child that walks through the doors of Rockdale, I'm assigned to that first grade classroom, and I want to follow them. When they get in middle school, I want to follow them to high school. And if I don't follow, but it ends up only one, that's one that I've made a difference in their life. And it's also giving, it's an opportunity really for me to keep up with what's going on with the kids, because I have a niece that's 7 years old in St. Louis. And that's important because we talk, and I want to be able to connect with her, because this is a challenge for her in that her TT is in Cincinnati, and it's like, Cincinnati, can you come over tomorrow? You know, and you have to explain all this on the telephone or while you're on FaceTiming, you know, and then she'll say to me, TT, how you know that? And then I say, my other little kids at the Rockdale, she said, now, do you love them more than you love me? It's like, no, I love you equally, you know. So it's going to be a good opportunity. It's a good opportunity for me. And I think the main thing is to show them that you're committed and you show up and you're constant. You're there. Because a lot of children, you think about children who are traumatized, people come and go in their lives, and I want them to know that's that health lady. She's been here, you know, and she was at our Halloween party. She was at our Valentine's Day party. And then, you know, she was talking to us about that health stuff, you know, that we had to get our shots, and that shots only sting for a little bit. They don't hurt. They just sting for a little bit, you know, and that it's important that we go to the dentist and we get our teeth cleaned and all of that. Kids remember that, you know, and they can pass that on. So it's really creating a legacy and probably finding my next health commissioner to replace me. Who knows?
That health lady talking about that health stuff is Cincinnati Health Commissioner Melba Moore. I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Cincinnati Health Commissioner Melba Moore talking to me earlier. Up next, Cincinnati Zoo Director Thane Maynard. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks.